Hello, it is March 26, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 5.1 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I know we're going all baseball with an all-regular guest very soon, I promise, but we have two more we got to fit in before we get to that point. They are my two personal obsessions, two of my favorite guests I've ever had on this podcast. The first is today. It is time for the big, all-encompassing MLB season preview with Joe Sheehan, my favorite guest, actually, to be entirely honest. Joe Sheehan is going to chat all sorts of. Next week is my most self-indulgent podcast. This podcast is coming late in the week, and next week's will come early in the week. But most of you will want to skip next week's because it's going to be me completely Cardinal nerding out with Derek Gould, the beat reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the new vice president, by the way, of the Baseball Writers Association, and I would argue the best beat reporter on the planet. He and I are going to totally geek out about the Cardinals on Sunday. You might not want to listen to that because if you're like everyone else, you hate the Cardinals. But if you don't hate the Cardinals, you should listen to that one. But if you hate the Cardinals, or whether you don't hate the Cardinals, you will love this one because we have Joe Sheehan, my favorite baseball writer, and I'm elated to have him. He is, of course, from Sports Illustrated and the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. You are a fool if you are not subscribing to the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. Joe Sheehan Baseball.blogspot.com. It provides me joy every single time he sends something. Anyway, Joe and I are going to preview the season. Baseball preview. It's Joe Sheehan and me. Let's go. All right, I was so excited to have you on, Joe, that I think I sang most of your intro. So I apologize. Joe, thanks for coming on. It's been a while. I'm honored to have you.
Definitely will, man. Always good to talk to you, and glad to see the podcast is going so well.
Oh, yeah, we're having fun. So I figure this is a big baseball preview podcast. This is the official one, that is to say canon. I don't know. But we're going to go division by division, and you can tell me who your favorites are, who you think maybe is overrated a little bit, but we're just going to go through it. We're just going to plow through it because it is go time now. This starts in like a week. I mean, assuming Wrigley Field has a wall.
Well, my understanding is that they're not going to be done, and it's just going to be a pasture out there. They're not even going to have outfield fences. It's going to be like going back to baseball in the 1860s and 70s, where if you hit a ball past the outfielders, it just ran forever into the neighbor's yard.
Is that any weirder than having a flagpole in a hill in center field? I'm not sure it is.
No.
All right, so we'll start with the American League. Yeah, let's go west. Let's start with the American League West. We're gonna work our way in that direction. You know, when you look at this division, it feels like, you know, Texas. It looks like they're starting to get past the point that they could be like, oh, we just had a bad injury year. Because with Darvish out, they were already probably low. Now they're even lower. Oakland. The thing I loved about Oakland's offseason was it was kind of similar in a way to the Dodgers' little run there, where it's like, wait, I don't know what they're doing. Oh, okay. And now it's starting to come around. Now I can kind of figure out what's going on. But still, a lot of people have the Angels as the favorite in the division. Of course, Seattle right there with them, and Houston finally cromulent again. What's your general take on this division, kind of looking at 50,000 feet up?
Well, it's actually changed in the last month, because I actually thought the Rangers, you give them, you know, take away Ron Washington, who was always good to cost them a couple games a year, give them a full year of Yu Darvish, hopefully give them a full year of a developing Drix and Profar. I really like their comeback. And, you know, they had a biblical spate of injuries last year, Will. I was going to be picking them, but without Darvish, their ceiling is so much lower. They really just don't have anything in-house that's going to replace the projected 200 innings, you figure five, conservatively 4 or 5 wins above replacement that he brings. They've got some interesting young starters in the system, but nobody can say, okay, he's going to step in and give you that kind of production. They're going to have to replace Darvish with more runs scored, with better work out of the bullpen, and really the bullpen's the one area of that team that I think was going to be a little bit shaky. So I can't go with the Rangers any longer. You mentioned the A's. I think we're back where we were 3 years ago, where, you know, you kind of project the A's to not be very good, and then we're going to get surprised. Everybody's picking the Mariners. Everybody seems to love their offseason with picking up Cruz. Personally, I don't think that Saunders' injury notwithstanding, Saunders for Cruz is a gain. I think that if you look at everything the players bring, you know, defense, base running, all the things we're supposed to be looking at in a, quote, war framework, Saunders is as good, if not a better player than Cruz is. Plus, he's on the right age, right part of the aging curve. So, I think the history of the Mariners going out and picking up right-handed power hitters in recent years is pretty disastrous. You look at Montero or Morse, Bay, all the guys they brought in to try to fill that role for them. I think Cruz is a good and an adequate player. I don't think he's a star. I think that he's going to be a low OBP slugger, which is what he's been for most of his career. And I'm not sure the power is going to play in that ballpark. I end up defaulting to the Angels. Yeah. Not because I think they're that great, but I think when you start with Mike Trout and you start with Jared Weaver and you start with a bouncing back Albert Pujols, who when healthy seems like he's reached that part of his career where it's not going to be a decline. It's just going to be a lesser player, a 2-3 win player for the next 4 years. I think that gives you a base. Mike Socha, I can go back and forth about his tactics, but he's kind of a middling manager. I don't necessarily think he hurts the team the way, say, Ned Yost or Ron Washington does. They have the money to where if they have to make a move in season, they can do it. I don't really know what they're going to do at second base. They brought in Johnny Giamatella. Grant Green is in the mix. There's a rookie, the shortstop, I'm going to say Featherstone, if I'm going to get the name correctly. There's a lot of questions about this team, but this is a division that 2 years ago looked like the best in baseball, and now all of a sudden you look and say, yeah, I think somebody's going to get to 90 wins, but I can't tell you who it's going to be.
Yeah, it's weird because it does feel like – I remember when the A's kind of – there was that sense of the A's, they better do it this year because this division's got Giants coming. But it actually does feel like they've all taken a step back, except, of course, for the Astros. And I think, obviously, this is their first – all right, we're not actively – they had made a step forward last year. It's not so much that they're contending this year. It feels like they're maybe 1 year away from their Cubs year. If that makes sense, do you think they're going in the right direction? Do you see them, if not necessarily making a play this year, but certainly taking maybe another step forward?
Yeah, the bad things that happened last year with not signing the draft picks, with Carlos Correa getting hurt, are probably going to hurt them down the line. It doesn't really affect their 2015 all that much. And typically teams that take a big step forward last year, and the Astros won a lot more games, the plexiglass principle dictates that they'll fall back a little bit. I don't think they're nearly good enough to actually contend in this division. I think that if you put them in, what do you figure the weakest division in baseball is? The AL Central this year? I mean, there's no standout weak division where there's been in other years. But I don't think there's a division you can put the Astros in where you'd say, they're a contender this year. I think there'll be some regression. I'm fascinated to see how some of these players develop. George Springer was really one of the more exciting players in baseball before he got hurt last year, and I'm really curious to see how he works out. It's an interesting experiment with the offense. It's this maximum power, maximum strikeout offense with Jose Altuve in the mix. So I think it'd be a fun team to watch, but I don't see them as taking another step forward and possibly getting into the wild card mix. What was supposed to be happening here is the Rangers were supposed to run the show.
Right.
If you look at where they were in 2010 and 2011, where they were getting to as a franchise, where their development was coming, and the way in which their top guys have gotten injured have really undercut everything they've tried to do.
Yeah.
So, you could argue, okay, they shouldn't have traded Kinsler for Fielder. Maybe they shouldn't have signed Shin-Soo Choo, and we can talk about that. But the real problem the Rangers have is that their farm system didn't turn into a baseball team. And, we talk about a little bit about the Royals. Prior to last year, that was one of the problems they were having. The Mariners, to a certain extent, not being able to turn that crop of prospects into a baseball team. Well, this is a key skill for an organization. We're going to see if the Cubs can do it. We're going to see if the Astros can do it. But I think the AL West right now is not where it should have been because the Rangers never really took that step.
Yeah, it's weird because it kind of looks like there's two – like it feels like the Angels and the Mariners better win this year. But I say that because it feels like they're older teams that are kind of putting a lot on this year. But I say that under this perhaps old assumption that these young Turks are coming. But like the Astros are certainly trying, the A's are building something. But it's just weird to see a division where there are so many teams that have major flaws but also seem to be going for it this year.
Yeah, and that's one of the changes in baseball, I think, over the winter. I should say as compared to last year, maybe recent years. There are fewer teams flat out tanking. The teams that have been tanking, the Cubs, the Astros to a certain extent, are kind of taking the Padres. They're all saying, okay, now we want to try to win. And the teams in that middle tier are still trying to win. If you look at teams like the Brewers.
Yeah.
Team of the Brewers, who was a contender last year because literally only five teams in the National League finished over, only six teams in the National League finished over 500. They're getting challenged from behind now as all of these teams finally say, okay, now we're going to try to win. Feeling that the Braves really aren't trying to win. Nobody really knows what the Braves are doing. The Phillies aren't really trying to win. Okay, nobody really knows what the Phillies are doing.
Right.
But there are fewer teams where you are just flat out going Sam Hinkie on the league.
Yeah. All right, I want to move over to the American League Central. It's funny you brought up Milwaukee because one of the things I've been kind of one of my things I've been my talking points this year. I find the fact because I think the National League Central is the best division in baseball, or is at least close to it, or and may and will be moving forward. But I think if you look at the two teams, I think people generally consider the teams that won't contend, or at least were unlikely to contend in the NL Central, the Reds and the Brewers. I feel like you could put them in the American League Central. And they're a contender in a lot of ways. And it's the Central is a weird division because, again, this is another one of those divisions where there's a top, there's a clearly wobbling, older, rich team just desperately trying to hang on. But I don't necessarily see that next team ready to take that step up. Now, I have seen the cover of the Sports Illustrated Season Preview Edition, so I know that there's some thoughts over on that office. I've been kind of a White Sox guy. I kind of like that. I like that they're kind of going for it in a way that they got that turned around a lot faster than I think anybody thought they were going to. And I'm down on the Royals, and the Twins are a while away. When you look at this division, is Detroit still the favorite? And if not, who's the one that's most likely to take them out?
I could see four teams finishing between 81 and 88 wins. I'm not sure I could pick any of these teams to win 90. You know, you're right about the Tigers. All of a sudden, they traded Porcello, they lost Scherzer, and all of a sudden that great rotation they were building around suddenly doesn't seem quite as intimidating, and they don't really have the offense to back it up. I mean, Cabrera's still a great player, but he's not going to be having 170 OPS plus seasons anymore. Now he's back to that, you know, we talked about this with Pujols just a couple minutes ago. He's that next level down. Victor Martinez, you're betting on a 35-year-old guy. J.D. Martinez, I got killed on Twitter last year. I was doubting J.D. Martinez all season, and he continued to hit well in the postseason. We'll see if he can continue being productive. But, you know, when that's your third best hitter, I think you've definitely got some issues building an offense. They're kind of faking center field. They're hoping that Nick Castellanos comes along to third base. There's a lot of wish casting going on. And this may be, you know, maybe they have one more year in this before that Indians rotation or, you know, the Twins young stars or, you know, the White Sox have done. The White Sox had a wonderful winter. I'm not somebody who likes dipping into the mid-tier free agent market, but in terms of tactical strikes, they really did improve their roster. But I can't say I see a clear favorite. And I think I'm going to end up picking the White Sox. I'm kind of, you know, on the fence about this division. But I like what they did the offseason. I'm not a big Robin Ventura fan. I don't think he's a particularly good tactical manager. But you know, he's had some success there. He's actually brought along a guy like Abreu. You have to give him a little bit of credit for, okay, we're giving you this Cuban star who knows what's going to happen. And Jose Abreu having, you know, this breakout season in his first year. We'll see what he does with the bullpen. He's got a better bullpen than he had last year. He has Duke now in the eighth. He's got Robinson in the ninth. Some of those arms they were trying to bring along last year, Jake Patryka and Danny Putnam and guys like that, I think they'll fit better as supporting parts than as max leverage type pitchers. So, you know, I'm interested to see where it goes there. And the Indians, fascinating, right? I mean, you know, the guys like Salazar and Bauer could take really big steps forward this year. And all of a sudden you could have a run prevention monster. Defense has been an issue for them the last few years. Trading as Drubal Cabrera helps, but you know, they still, you know, I think they want to go Jose Ramirez. We'll see if Jason Kipnis is long term. He might be a left fielder, but at least for this year, he'll be a second baseman. The outfield, you've got Michael Bourne, who's 32 now in center. The defense is still going to be a concern for them. And does that undercut the work of the pitching? They're not as reliant on Justin Masterson anymore, who's a ground ball pitcher. They've gotten rid of him. It's really more of a strikeout staff now. But now it's. Again, every one of these teams say, yes, they have, but they don't have. And we can fill in, we can play this game with every team in the division except the Twins. I think it's going to be a fascinating race. The one thing I'm reasonably sure of is that the wild card will not come out of this division because you have four teams that are competitive, but none of them. But you're not going to see two of them get to 92 wins.
In a theoretical universe, if the Royals don't get that wild card last year, and we're looking at the team now, like, that feels like even deeper despair. Like, I feel like they're getting away with a lot. And I understand why they made some of the moves they did. But when you look to see, like, James Shields is not that great of a pitcher. To see them down, like, Baseball Prospectus playoff odds has them at 10.4% playoffs, which seems a little low, granted. But still, like, it feels like that team has a ton of questions for a team that at least felt young in the playoffs last year. It doesn't feel like they've got they're that solid moving forward.
But you say you understand their moves. Can you explain them to me? Because I see absolutely no sense to what they did this offseason in signing Rios and signing Morales. It's the kind of things you do when you have a 92-win team and you just want to make sure that you don't have replacement-level performance at some spots. And this was not. This was a bad offense last year. And they brought in guys who aren't going to make it a whole lot better. Now, if you want to say, okay, they're counting on Hosmer and Moustakas, they're excited about the way those guys played the postseason, those guys are going to get better. I could actually even buy into that. Those guys are signed anyway, so why not, you know, you're not going to replace them. But I, you know, Kentrys Morales has not been a terribly productive player in the last 4 years, and now he's 31, 32. He's a terrible fit for that park.
Yeah.
He's exactly the kind of player who doesn't go to that park and hit well. Alexi Rios, he had 4 homers playing in Texas last year. I actually checked. I think it was the fewest home runs any regular had ever hit playing in that ballpark. And it's just, I mean, he, granted, that's the kind of player that fits, but I mean, does Rios really bring you that much more than just playing, you know, platooning Dyson and finding some Justin Ruggiano, Chris D'Onofrio type player to platoon? I mean, you know, Scott Van Slyke is not available, but that kind of 250 at bat average defense corner man to platoon with Dyson. I think they've just thrown away a bunch of money. Edinson Volquez, if you look at Edinson Volquez last year, not only was there a huge gap between his actual ERA and, you know, any projection you want to use, Sierra or FIP or what have you, but he's moving away from one of the great framing catchers in the game in Russell Martin. Now, Russell Martin wasn't going to stay in Pittsburgh, don't get me wrong, but like, I think a lot of Volquez's year last year was a good defense that shifted aggressively, that had a catcher that turned a lot of Edinson Volquez's nonsense into strikes. Now he's moving to Kansas City, and yes, there's a defense behind him, but Salvi Perez, for all of his assets, is a bad framing catcher. I think that alone is going to add a bunch of numbers to his ERA. I think Edinson Volquez was a terrible signing. I think right now, Chris Young would be my pick for their fifth spot. So you look at Chris Young, he's right in that Jason Vargas, Jeremy Guthrie mode of a strike thrower who just, here, hit the ball to my outfielders. Right. And in Kauffman Stadium,
right.
That's another, yeah, exactly, that kind of pitcher. So, I think if the point I continue to make about the Royals is that, yes, it's been a nice couple of years, but you've outscored your opponents by 25 runs a year, and you've yet to win 90 games, and you've yet to win a division, and yay, you won a wild card in the 1 year where 89 wins got you a wild card in the American League, which is the first time, I believe, since 1996 that less than 90 wins got you a wild card in the American League. So, hey, congratulations, and I'm glad you enjoyed it, and it doesn't look like it's ever going to happen again.
Oh, that's uplifting. My last question about the Central, when is it official? Like, can Detroit, I keep talking like Detroit, this is the last year. Can they sneak in one more, or is this really the last run?
I want to know what Justin Verlander has left. But even saying that, I want to know if David Price is going to be there another year. Like, I don't know what the 2016 Tigers necessarily are going to look like. Are they going to be built around this top three rotation? Excuse me. Or are they going to be built around Adibal Sanchez's weak shoulder and Justin Verlander now being more of a number three starter and David Price is gone? We know they're willing to spend the money, but there comes a point where there's just nothing left to spend the money on. You tell me next year, okay, they're going to go out and sign Jason Hayward. Okay. I can believe in that, but they've got a lot of money committed to aging hitters right now. The farm system has gone completely fallow. There's just nothing coming through that system anymore. And, you know, I don't know. We'll see how Castellanos develops this year. We'll see if Iglesias can stay healthy and on the field. I think both those things will help, but I have real concern. I mean, this team is suddenly on the brink of looking very old and very not good. I will say this. The Tigers as possibly best team in the American League, that's over. Yeah. That is gone. Now it's, can you be the best team in the Central and then make a playoff run?
Yeah, and they never really dominated the Central as much as you thought they were going to. You know, like every year you thought, oh, well, obviously they're going to win by 15 games, and they were always scraping by at the end. So even the heyday has not quite turned out for them.
Well, we'll see what happens in the bullpen this year. The bullpen's always been kind of a drag on them. You know, Joe Nathan last year was a disaster. They still got him. Excuse me. I'd love to see Bruce Rondon. Guy throws 100, comes off Tommy John surgery, still throws 100. Can he step up and be a key guy in that bullpen for them? If they can get that bullpen straightened out, that's one of the things that's dragged them back to the pack over the years has been that bullpen. If the bullpen can have that one good year, I think that'll help considerably.
All right, moving over to the American League East, you know, this is if I keep feeling, you know, this reminds me a little bit of 2 years ago when it felt like it was going to be a jumble, and then Boston just turned out to just kind of run away with it. But this feels like more of a, and same with last year, it feels like a jumble, and then one team kind of emerges a little bit. Of these five teams, which do you think is the most likely to emerge in the way that Boston and Baltimore did the last couple of years?
Yeah, I look at the Red Sox. I love what they did this winter. As much as I don't care for their rotation starting the season, if you look at what that rotation could be in July and August with Eddie Rodriguez and Henry Owens and Matt Barnes, a lot of that young talent they have in Pawtucket, it's going to start the year in Pawtucket. It could be a really impressive rotation down the stretch. Their offense, I think the offense is going to be amazing. Whatever the standard is for amazing offense these days, you know, 800 runs or something. Excuse me. Well, I'm not used to talking this. I'm a retired podcaster now.
I know. You put on your old Spurs. I'm honored.
I had to dig up the headset to do this. I love what they did with the offense. I think they're going to score an absolute ton of runs. I think it's going to be more than enough to run away with a division that, you know, is not what it was a few years back. You know, the Yankees, there's a world in which the Yankees win 90, 95 games. I mean, if everybody on that roster were to stay healthy and everybody were to have a good year, yes, I can project the Yankees to 95. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes the team just has a year where everybody stays healthy and it works out. It's not really the way to bet, but certainly the Yankees have that kind of upside. But I think they're going to be in that, you know, kind of a secondary wild card mix. You know, the Blue Jays were going to be everybody's hot pick. And I know personally losing Stroman really affected my opinion of the team. I mean, there were already a couple of issues in terms of, you know, who's going to play second base, what are they going to get out of center field. You know, Dalton Pompey's a popular prospect, but he's played very little above A ball. And I hate projecting those guys for major league success. You know, second base, Storrs is in the mix. You know, Ryan Goins failed for them last year. There were holes. And now you take Stroman, who I'm not going to say it's like the Darvish injury, but it's taking away the guy who had number one ability for that team. Burley or Dickey is their listed number one, but in terms of a guy who can come in and actually give you number one performance, it was going to be Stroman. It puts additional pressure on them to, you know, does Sanchez move back to the rotation? Probably not. Daniel Norris might end up making the team now, which is rushing him a little bit, but you know, they've put so much into this run now. I remember 2 years ago, I mean, they made the trade for Reyes, and they made that big push, and it didn't work out. This is kind of the second chance. I'm not sure Alex Anthopoulos gets a third chance. If this Blue Jays team this year doesn't contend, I got to figure he's out of a job. So a little bit of moral hazard here, a little bit of a tough spot for Anthopoulos to be in because, you know, give this team Stroman, I think they challenge the Red Sox and they're at the front of the wild card pack. Without Stroman, I think it's going to be a little bit more of a struggle.
And certainly, you know, there appears to be some kind of weird kismet that Baltimore's pulled together for these last 3 years. I keep thinking this is the last year and it's not the last year for them. Do they have that to hang together this year? Do they just need someone like Machado to be healthy all year and move them in, and Wieters to be healthy all year through in that direction? Where do you see them?
Yeah, I mean, they managed to do that last year without the guys we thought they would be building around. I think there's a credit here to not having holds. If you look at that team, particularly that rotation, they don't have bad pitching. They have, you know, Waldo Jimenez didn't work out, but they replaced him with Miguel Gonzalez effectively. Five league average starters, and there's value in that. And obviously, Showalter's done a great job getting work out of the bullpen. They've turned Tommy Hunter into an effective reliever. You know, a guy like Darren O'Day lifted off the scrap heap and turned into an effective reliever. Zach Britton going from being a failed starter to, you know, an all-star closer. You really got to credit Showalter for a lot of what's happened there. So as long as he's still there, I think that, you know, the Orioles are still going to have a puncher's chance. Now, I want to say it was up until about November of last year that I said the Orioles couldn't win the American League East. So apparently I was wrong about that. And I'm going to start this year saying, you know, I think they're probably the second or third best team in the division. It is a weaker division, and I think that's going to help them a little bit. And, you know, obviously they project Machado back, but what is Machado at this point? I mean, offensively he wasn't developing last year. A lot of his value does stem from being a very good shortstop playing third base. So, I mean, I'm not saying anything that's a bad thing, but, you know, what is he going to be as a hitter? He's lost some developmental time as well. Still just 22 now, you know, what kind of player he's going to be? Matt Wieters, is he going to catch 1,000 innings? Is he going to catch 500 innings? Is he going to catch 250 innings? You know, he caught one game and all of a sudden had to be shut down again. Talking to you right now, I'm not sure what we're going to get out of Matt Wieters this year. There's not really a ton of room for him to be DH. They need him behind the plate. And, you know, really, he's never had a DH-level bat. for all the, you know, Matt Wieters facts. Here's a Matt Wieters facts. Here's Matt Wieters facts for you. The man never developed as a hitter. He's a good hitter. He's not a great one. He's not the kind of guy you say, okay, well, if he, you know, Chris Hoyles was somebody that if he couldn't hit, if he couldn't catch, you could play him at DH. Matt Wieters is not that guy. A lot of his value stems from his defense. And you're going to come back to this theme with this team. A lot of the value of the players on this team, you look at Machado, Hardy, Scope at second base, Chris Davis. That is a fantastic defensive infield. The Orioles, who don't get a lot of credit as being one of these modern shifting teams, they just put really good defensive players on the field and let them go. So you know, that's something that's been a part of their success as well. But it worked in a year last year where the traditional AL East powers weren't very good. I'm not sure it's going to work in a year where the Red Sox project to win 94 games.
And last team here, I feel bad skipping over Toronto a little bit, but I think you covered them pretty well. When you look at Tampa Bay, I feel like this is a year I'd love to see them do well. I almost feel like the gain for the Dodgers is actually more than the loss for the Rays. The gain for the Dodgers and Cubs is more than the loss for the Rays. They've still got a smart system in place. Long term, there still may be issues with the Rays, but they still have a lot of very smart people in charge.
Yeah, and I'm biased because some of those smart people used to work with me.
right.
James Click and Chaim Bloom, and I'd love to see them do well. I have friends in the scouting department as well. It does feel like, just organizationally, let's set aside the baseball team on the field just for a second. Organizationally, it feels like it's over, right? They were good for 6 years and still couldn't move the needle on attendance. I think we all agree now that the problem is the location of the ballpark. And people wouldn't really come out and see them except when the Yankees came to town. Even as good as they were, they still couldn't move the needle on attendance. So what happens now when they're not projected to be very good? If people wouldn't come out and see a 95-win team, are they really going to come out and see an 85-win team or possibly a 75-win team? I don't think this team can be bad. I look at that rotation, and assuming pitcher health, which is never a perfect thing, and they get more back at midseason, that rotation is really going to be something to watch. I think the problem scoring runs are still going to be there. It's still a pitching and defense team. We don't know what the drop-off will be from Joe Maddon to Kevin Cash. Kevin Cash is essentially a cipher. We know that a number of teams, he was in the mix for a number of different jobs. I don't know whether he's going to be an asset or somebody turns into Ron Washington. He's a blank slate at this point. But this is a team now that really can't have its manager hurting it. They just don't have the talent base. They need the manager to be adding things or at the very least not be hurting them. And you know, we'll see what happens there. I can't see them winning 70 games. Like, I can't see them dropping that far. But I also, they seem to have a fairly limited range for me. If you tell me if I look at all the teams in baseball right now, typically if I make a projection, if I tell you I think a team's going to win 83 games, implied that means I think they'll be somewhere between 80 and 86. I don't think any of us can get any more accurate than +3 or -3. So there's that implied window of an accuracy. If I say 83, I mean 80 to 86.
Yeah, and the last two or three games are always glorified spring training games. But
exactly. Right. But some teams the window's wider than others. Like for the Rangers coming into the season, I would have said, you know, they could be anywhere in a 20-game range. If you tell me anywhere from 72 to 92, I'll probably believe it. So other teams have a more narrow window, and I think the Nationals are one of them. Like the Nationals are going to be, I think the low end for the Nationals is probably 88, 89 wins. And their upper end is, you know, the mid to high 90s. If you look at the Rays, I think they have a very low top end. They top off at, you know, 84, 85 wins, and they have a very high low end, which is, you know, 75, 76 wins. The range for team, I think that's something we don't talk about as much, like the Cubs. If I tell you the Cubs win anything from 65 to 90 games, you can probably believe it, right? Yeah. Either the hitters come or the hitters don't come. The pitching turns out to be better than expected. They assemble a bullpen. The bullpen turns out to be great. Joe Maddon adds value. All these things go right for the Cubs, and they win 90, 92 games. But the hitters don't develop, and they literally have nothing else to build on, and it all falls apart. The range of some of these teams, I think, is interesting as any number you're going to hang on their projection.
All right, so I like talking Washington because let's go right in the National League East. I hadn't realized, I wrote about this earlier this month, that there have only, since 2005, there have only been three 100-win teams. which is really kind of amazing because I think it speaks, you know, it speaks to a lot of things. But it's been rare that that 2011 Phillies team. And when you take it's been rare that you've looked at the beginning of the year and be like, all right, that team's got a pretty solid chance to win 100 games. Now, I'm a little wary of doing that just because part of the reason you do that with Washington is you're looking like, all right, the Braves are going to be bad. The Phillies are going to be bad. The Marlins and Mets both have fall-off-the-cliff possibilities, even if they're maybe a little bit better than they've been in the past. But it does look like it's set up, particularly with them going for it. And I'm so glad when they signed Scherzer, there was all this, well, now they got to trade Strasburg. Screw that, man. Go for it. I love that they went for it. So to me, this looks like as close, obviously predicting a 100-win team is incredibly difficult, but this looks as close as a good of a bet as we've had in a while.
Yeah, you're right about some of that. You look at a team that's going to play almost a third of its schedule against the Braves, Phillies, Rockies, and Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
And that's 38-12 in those two games, in those 50 games. So you start with that base. And I think the caution comes in that 2 years ago we would have said the same thing, right? We're all hyped about the Nationals with Strasburg and a full season of Harper, and it didn't really work out. There's nothing else challenging. I can't see the Braves. You know, there's no other team in that division I think has the talent base to make a move. I know everybody's excited about the Marlins. I don't trust the offense. I don't trust the back end of the rotation. I'm just not sure what Mike Redmond is at this point. There are a lot of doubts I have about the Marlins. The Marlins might be still a year away. The Mets chance. Well, I know you've moved away. There's a lot of hype here in New York about the Mets, and
yeah.
I think there was a lot of excitement about, okay, maybe this is the 84 team, right? All of a sudden, they come out of nowhere, Davey Johnson, and there's all these platoons, but the young pitching really takes a step forward. I think that the chance of that happening now is less because it's Wheeler. And right. Not that there's a ton of difference between Wheeler and Syndergaard, but the fact that now they can't have both Wheeler and Syndergaard, along with Harvey, along with DeGrom, along with Nice, and now they're going to need Bartolo Colon. Now they're going to need Dylan G. And the offense is not even just the offense, but the defense. I hate what they did this winter. They still have no shortstop. And Terry Collins isn't Davey Johnson. Let's come out and say that as well. So, the loss of Wheeler just is a signifier for, hey, maybe they're just not that good this year. So, yeah, the Nationals have a primrose path to the division title. And, again, I think the Nationals could represent, if you look at the 2014-15 Nationals as a unit, what do we value? Do we value the team that wins 198, 200 games over two regular seasons? Do we care about that if they lose 3 out of 4 to the Giants twice in September? We could be talking about the Nationals 7 months from now and saying, and not really caring that they won 100 games because we just don't respect that kind of performance anymore. The teams that win 105 games don't mean a whole lot to us if they don't win, I can do math, 11 more.
Well, yeah,
we care about the last 11 a lot more than we care about the first 105.
Now, this is going to come as a shock to you, but I'm going to bring up 2001 postseason. And the Phillies that year were, I mean, this that they were built in a way, like I think the Nationals are a little younger and a little
2011, you mean, right?
I'm sorry, 2011. I'm sorry. Yes, 2011 postseason. The 2011 Phillies are built, the Nationals are a little younger and they're a little, they're a little more like firmly, they have more of a firm foundation as we saw from the Phillies. But that Phillies team was, that was dominant rotation. Mm-hmm. Like it was supposed to like roam them through the postseason. And the minute that they lost in that postseason, the Phillies just fell off a cliff and everyone forgot that team was ever great.
Right. And that wasn't the year they lost to the Giants. You're talking about the year they lost to the 1-0 game to Rafael Furcal.
Yeah.
Imagine that. You're going to bring that up.
I know. Weird. I don't know why. Listen, you did it, right?
Folks, if you had 34-23 in the podcast for Will bringing up the Cardinals. I completely agree. I think we just don't remember the great regular season teams anymore. And I didn't get a whole lot of great response on this. Yesterday I proposed that baseball has no business playing 162 games anymore when we just dismiss the results of the regular season. Let's drop back to 132-game season. Eliminate 2 weeks in early April where you're playing baseball in places that nobody wants to be outside in early April. Eliminate 2 weeks at the end of the season where everybody cares about their fantasy football team anyway, and get on with the postseason. I don't see a reason to play 162 games when we just don't care anymore about the regular season the way we used to. And this is me essentially conceding the argument that the regular season versus postseason argument, that argument has been lost. history has determined that fans care about the postseason. The industry cares about the postseason. So, anyway, I think the Nationals could very well win 100 to 105 games this year. I think they're that good a team, and I think it absolutely won't matter if, you know, they happen to run into Madison Bumgarner again.
Or Pete Cosma. Don't forget Pete Cosma.
Is he still with the Cardinals?
You know, I think he's going to end up, because he's out of options. And their general theory, let's turn this briefly into a Cardinals podcast as we transition into the Cardinals. Because I figured what better way to honor the Washington Nationals than talking about Pete Cosma for a couple minutes. Pete Cosma, basically, he's out of options, and their general theory is they don't want to just give him away. I mean, he's a good defensive shortstop. That's not nothing. And, like, I think they're wary. If they send him down, they risk losing him. So I think he may stay on the roster all year, even though he still can't hit at all. I think he'll probably be on the roster this year, if you can believe
it. He's going to make you miss Daniel Descalso.
Oh, man. That's not, to be fair, Descalso can't play in it. The great thing about Descalso, he's one of those old-timey La Russa players that he played a bunch of positions poorly, and it made him a utility man. Like the Aaron Miles thing. At least Cosma can play a lot of positions. I think that's why they keep him around. But as a hitter, you're right. He's like worse. He's shockingly bad. And he was the first. One of the great jokes, of course, is for years, Cardinal fans were very angry because of a money issue. They didn't draft Rick Porcello. Instead, they drafted Pete Cosma. And so Pete Cosma became this joke in the organization for years and years and years. And then 2012 happened, and now it's still bizarre. So let's go. I still can't believe that happened. I'm sorry. Jack Kogut is screaming at me right now, as is every other Washington fan. I apologize for that. Okay, we're going to the National League Central. Speaking of the Cardinals, I think this is the best division in baseball. And I think it's because top to the bottom, like, there's no obvious bad team here. You know, I think the Reds and Brewers are going to have some issues. And you can see, particularly with the Reds, how this could go bad. And by August and September, this is a very different team than what they have going into the season. But I still feel like there's no obvious bottom dwellers in there. And, you know, you see obviously what the Cubs are building. And to me, I feel like the Pirates, you know, last year was the year the Pirates were supposed to take a step back. They were supposed to not quite have it last year. That was a transition year, and then they moved forward this year. I think people are, as good as Martin was, I wonder if they're overrating that loss a little bit. They still have a big hole at catcher, but still it feels like this team is still primed. This team made the playoffs last year when it was supposed to be their transition year. Moreover, moving forward, the Cardinals, Cubs, and Pirates fighting it out for the next 5 to 10 years, to me, I mean, I'd like to say I can't wait to see it, except I wish every team in this division were the Phillies, except for the Cardinals. But as a baseball fan, Cardinals, Cubs, Pirates heading forward, those are three great franchises that are built incredibly well, that are set up for quite a long time moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know. It may or may not be the best team in baseball this year, and it kind of, that depends a little bit on what you think. It should be the best division in baseball. It depends on what you think about the Cubs, but there's no question that if you look 3 years down the road and you've got the Cardinals, who are still really, I'm not kissing up to the host when I say this, really one of the signature franchises in the game, both in terms of financial success and on-field success and the way they're run. You expect that they're going to continue to be good. And you look at, you know, the Pirates with what they've done and the patience that they've shown with Neil Huntington, now that's starting to hopefully pay off. We'll see if Gregory Polanco takes a step forward this year. We'll start to see, hopefully, that young pitching. Hopefully, you know, James Tyon can get healthy, and, you know, a guy like Tyler Glasnow starts to step forward. I mean, that rotation in a year's time can be very entertaining. And, of course, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have heard a little bit about the Cubs and what they're building in Chicago. So, you know, these are great races, you know, 2016 and beyond. As far as this year is concerned, I think you have to take the Cubs out of that mix.
Yeah.
There is an upside play for the Cubs where everything works out and they're in that. But I think it's a Cardinals-Pirates division. I think the Cardinals are a little bit better. You mentioned the loss of Martin. Not just Martin in terms of, you know, what he brought defensively in the pitch framing, but he did have, what, a 400 OBP last year.
He's good.
And that was never going to happen again, and I think they got out at the right time. They did bring in Francisco Cervelli, who has, they're hoping to kind of get Russell Martin light, not just that they got a catcher from the Yankees, but somebody who, framing, exactly. They're hoping to get that. And that staff needs that. That's not an overpowering pitching staff once you get past Garrett Cole. I think that it's guys like Liriano and, you know, Jeff Locke and, you know, Charlie Morton, who kind of need a catcher who's going to steal them some strikes. It's not a dominant staff. That's why you look 2 years down the road, I think the rotation is going to be a lot more exciting. But they play very good defense. They're as aggressive as any team in baseball in terms of shifting. They've integrated their analytics staff. There was a great piece towards the end of last year by Ben Lindbergh at Grantland, talking about how Mike Fitzgerald is their stat guy, and he actually and the relationship he has with the on-field staff. Clint Hurdle has done a complete 180 from where he was earlier in his career as a manager. And I think you've got to give him a lot of credit for that. He's been open to a lot of this new information in Pittsburgh in a way that firstly, I'm not sure that the information was even available to him in Colorado.
Yeah, right.
But for him to have opened up, and we talk a lot about Madden and his relationship with that Rays front office, Bob Melvin with the A's. I think Clint Hurdle is right there in that group of managers that has embraced this information and turned it into a way to add wins. And I don't think we can talk enough about that. I mean, this is... We're talking about stats. We had the Charles Barkley issue last month, right? Or was it earlier this month? March is 73 days. As far as I'm concerned. I don't know what day it is.
I feel exactly the same way.
This is the way it was always supposed to look. It's never been about scouts versus stats. It's always been about integrating all the information towards winning. And I love stories like that. I love when the on-field staff and the analytics staff are able to work together. So I've definitely enjoyed what the Pirates have done here the last couple of years. For 2015, I think it's a good race. I think that the Pirates are the best second-place team in the league. I think if I had to pick one team that's going to be in that wild card game again this year, it's going to be the Pirates. You talk about last year. Historically, I think we're going to look back at 2014 as a very strange time in baseball history because of so many teams were tanking last year, and they're just, as I say, only six teams finished above 500 in the National League, which is highly unusual. Yeah. The Pirates almost fell into their playoff spot just because all of the teams that you had the Braves collapsing, you had the Phillies collapsing, you had the Padres didn't take a step forward, the Rockies collapsed. I mean, all these teams just kind of had bad years. And then you had teams that weren't even trying to compete, like the Cubs. But I do think that the Pirates took advantage of that, and they made the playoffs. You take that away from them. But this year it's more of a, hey, they're clearly the, I don't know, I guess Nationals, Cardinals, I can make an argument, because I still don't completely trust the Dodgers that the Pirates are the third best team in the league.
We talked about the Reds briefly. Do they blow this team up by July?
I would have blown it up already. I think once you traded Latos and you didn't use that money to add some hairy beast of a left fielder, right. I mean, that's if you want to trade Latos to add a left fielder, fine. You don't trade Latos to add 37-year-old Marlon Byrd. That doesn't actually move the needle at all. I can't see this team as much better than a fringe wildcard contender. They're worse than they were last year. And last year, obviously, with Votto out the second half, that was a disaster for them. They averaged, I think, it was 1.3 runs per game without Votto in the lineup. I'm rounding here. That could be a little bit off. Getting Votto back helps. Hopefully, Jay Bruce bounces back from the worst year of his career. There's the same thing where there's a limit to how bad they can probably be, but I just can't see this team scoring enough runs and preventing enough runs. I mean, the bullpen in front of Chapman could be shaky. The back end of the rotation, Anthony DeSclafani. They're going to go with this kid, Raisel Iglesias, who's torn up the spring. We'll see if that works out. But at best, they're a wild card contender. They're not a team that can win 93 games and challenge the Cardinals for the division. And yes, there's some blow up potential. The problem is, Cueto, but we've seen guys who only have like 6 weeks left on their contracts, 8 weeks left, whatever it'll be in July. Those guys are hard to trade. You don't get a ton back for them anymore. Plus, if you trade Cueto, you're giving up the first-round draft pick. You're giving up the supplemental that you'll get after the season when he leaves as a free agent. So it's hard to trade a guy like that. Votto's probably not tradable. Bruce might be tradable, depending on how he's playing this year. It might be a hard team to blow up.
And I feel like the Brewers, there was last year, maybe the year before, I think Baseball Prospectus had them as like the 30th, The franchise in the worst position moving forward, if just because of economics and farm system and so on. But I still feel like they the emergence of Lucroy, and I feel like Braun is going to have, like, he seems to finally be healthy now. And even when he was only halfway healthy at the beginning of last year, he still wasn't bad. It wasn't until until everything kind of fell off the table for him that he really collapsed last year. Do the Brewers have a puncher's chance?
I can't see it. The division, the Reds and the Brewers were contenders in a weaker division. And now that the Pirates have taken that step forward, the Cubs are better, you kind of look and say, okay, well, these teams were built to win a division that's not as good as it is right now. The rotation could fall apart at any time. I actually don't mind the get five number three starters and see what happens. We talk about that in the context of the Orioles. I mean, they got a couple guys with a little more talent in Gausman and Tilden, but I actually don't mind it, but the bullpen, you know, they had a lot of good work out of Zach Duke and Will Smith last year. Duke's gone. We'll see what Smith. We'll see what Smith does. You know, K-Rod, they brought him back. They've got some arms there. But the bullpen is something I worry about. I don't know if they're going to get enough guys on base. What is Gene Segura? Segura had basically two great months at the start of his rookie season 2 years ago and hasn't been a very good player since. Obviously, the tragic story last year is losing his young child. It's hard to talk about Segura as a player without referencing that, but hopefully he bounces back, both his personal and professional lives get back on track and he can hit for them at shortstop. I don't know. I don't think the talent base is there. You talk about Ryan Braun. 3 years ago, Ryan Braun was somebody you built around. Is he that guy anymore? He hasn't been the best player on the team for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. Carlos Gomez has taken over that role. So, I don't know. I can't get that excited about it. They finally have a Major League first baseman. I will give them that. The Brewers played 2 years without a Major League first baseman. Their 2013 first base situation was, I believe, deemed the worst position in baseball history.
Didn't they have Uni Betancourt there for a while?
And Alex Gonzalez. And don't ask me which one, it doesn't matter. so that was really, really bad. Last year was, a little bit of Mark Reynolds, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Well, it's better this year with Adam Lind at the very least. Plus, they've had massive right-left issues, so at least Lind helps the lineup balance. But, these are two teams that probably 500-ish teams that are going to look a little bit worse because of the division that they're in.
All right, and last thing on this visit, because I have to ask you a Cardinals question. To me, I'm excited about the team this year, and we're getting caught up in who's going to be the fifth starter and all this other business. To me, the overarching question, I think, for the Cardinals moving forward this year is, do they sign Hayward? He seems to be a fit in a lot of ways. If he starts up, where do you start getting, where on the approaching the Stanton contract curve do you start to get nervous if you're the Cardinals?
I don't think of Hayward as a guy who's going to get that kind of contract because he's always looked better for stat heads than in real baseball because the home runs and RBIs aren't there. A lot of his value comes from defense and base running. So I don't think you have to necessarily approach that with Hayward. I'll be honest, I would have tried to sign him in the offseason. Before seeing what he is, I think that every game he plays this year is going to get a little bit more expensive. But I don't think he approaches, Hayward money. I think that's you to get that kind of contract, you have to be a 45, 50 home run hitter with the kind of upside that Stanton has. I think with, I don't know. If I say Shin-Soo Choo, 7-140, but you're getting a player who's younger, who contributes on more levels, who frankly, has a better history of being a 3-4 win player than Chu did. Chu had an injury year. Chu had a year where he didn't hit. If I say right now you can get Hayward's age 26 to 33 seasons for $140, $140 million.
Yeah, I'd jump at it. I would. I'd jump at it.
That seems to me the upper bound. That was the Carl Crawford contract was set for $142, I believe. But I feel like that's the upper bound for Hayward. Unless he goes out and obviously the power comes. I've been saying for years that he's one swing adjustment from being a 30 home run hitter.
And that's what they want him to be. That's what they want him to be. Like that's not that I necessarily love when Mike Matheny gives advice, but that is the main thing that they've been telling me. He's putting him at leadoff clearly screwed him up a little bit last year.
Yep.
They need power more than they need anything else. I think that's what they want him to do. Which is why I wondered, you're right, about in the offseason not signing them. I think they want to wait to see how he feels and get him in there a little bit. But the one thing that increases his value a lot exponentially is power.
Yeah, and that's where you might. If he does turn into 30 home run here, you might have trouble signing him. But I will say this: this organization has a long and storied history of trading for a star and getting him to sign. It's what they do. Rolen, McGuire. I shouldn't use this name. Edmonds. Thank you. I was going to say Woody Williams. There's got to be a better example.
Yeah.
I think that's there. Whatever grief you take about the Cardinals. It's clearly a place that guys come to and decide they want to stay. And I think that's one of there's a culture there that whether it matters, I don't know if it'll matter to Jason Hayward or not, but it's an advantage that they've shown themselves to have. And if you can get an edge, the Cardinals now have, what is it now, another 6 months to convince Jason Hayward to stay. And if you can get Jason Hayward's prime for even market value, I think you've got to be pretty happy about that.
All right, I am nodding silently at what you're saying and giving no one anything to say.
Let me throw a question at you, though, because I think we've got to use this. We got to bring this name up. Are you worried about Waino?
I think you have to be a little worried about Waino. I think the hope with him, the hope with Wainwright is you can take some of the pressure off of him, and he won't want you to do it. But, you know, to me, the most encouraging thing I've seen about Wainwright has been Waka stepping forward. Yep. Waka looks fantastic, and he looks healthy and effortless. And again, his is the type of injury that can pop up out of nowhere, and you don't know. Like, he can look completely healthy in something. It's a weird injury. But to me, the thing that gets Wainwright in trouble is the same thing that got Carpenter in trouble. The bulldog thing. They got to go out there and throw 250 innings. If you can just get Wainwright to, like, listen, he pushes it to a point that by the end of last year, he was, you know, I mean, that was a wear injury rather than a freak injury. So for me, like, if you can take the pressure off of him, I think that helps a lot. And to where you can, if he gets six innings in, let him go. In a way that now he always feels like he has to push to eight to build up the rest of the staff. I thought Wainwright tends to be healthier when the rest of the staff is going deeper into games. This was the problem. This is why they made the trade for Lackey and
Masterson
last year, because they needed innings. Okay, and Wainwright was doing too much to try to get them those innings. To me, that's the hope, is if you have guys that give him take pressure off at the back end, I think that helps him. But yeah, I mean, expecting him to be, I do not expect him to be a top five Cy Young pitcher this year. And hopefully the Cardinals don't need him to be.
Well, the internal depth, I think, helps a lot too. When you can't find a place for Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot.
They might not have a place for Marco Gonzalez in the top six pitchers right now. The actual major issue they have right now is whether it's going to be Jaime. I'm of the belief that you start Jaime Garcia until inevitably his arm causes trouble again. And then you can put Carlos Martinez in that spot. But then do you put Carlos Martinez back in the bullpen? This is also a conversation for Derek Gould on next week's podcast, because I will nerd out with him for a long time.
But that's the thing. I mean, you'll do it with the Cardinals. I'll do it with 30 teams. Roster baiting time of year, I absolutely love it. I love trying to figure out who's going to be the platoon, who's going to bat second, who's going to be the third right-handed reliever. I love this stuff.
Yeah, so I'm with you, man. And so we wrap up with the National League West. The Diamondbacks are clearly rebuilding. The Rockies, I really don't know what they're doing at all. It is weird how most of the prognostications this division have come down to, it's an odd year, which is strange when it comes to the Giants. The Dodgers seem like the overwhelming favorites. It still feels like, I get what you say earlier about the not trusting them. It always feels like the Dodgers have wheels fall off potential. But I'm still not sure there's anyone else in this division, even with all the Padres' moves, that's really in a place to be able to usurp them.
Right, and I am by nature always looking for the reason to go against the grain. And I look at the 2015 NL West. I can't find myself not thinking the Dodgers. I just, for all that the Padres did, they haven't necessarily put it in the form of a baseball team yet. Yeah. There is no center fielder. Their infield actually might be the worst infield in baseball. Make an argument. I mean, we'll see if Alonso and Gurko get back to where, you know, they were supposed to be a couple of years ago. But, you know, you've got Barnes and Amarista at shortstop. You've got a third base situation that, you know, Solarte and Middlebrooks. I mean, stop me when I get to somebody who's established themselves as a major league player. And that's not a good – you've got a backup outfield that can't get on the field. I mean, they literally have a player in Carlos Quentin who's making $8 million who I can't project him as ever playing. It's an odd situation, but his only role is to pinch hit, and that role doesn't exist in a 12-pitcher, 13-position-player roster era. So it's an odd roster. It's an odd team. I still think they've got to probably try to make at least one trade here before the spring ends, and I think they'd like to find a home for some of these guys as well. You look at, you know, Cameron Maybin and Will Venable, and even beyond that, I mean, Reimer Liriano and Abraham Almonte. They've got all these players that can't physically get on the field. I think that they desperately could trade an outfield. They need to trade an outfielder for an infielder, but that trade's not necessarily out there. I want to be excited about the rotation. James Shields helps them because in Ross and Castro, they have two guys who you just don't bet on to throw 200 innings. So at least with Shields and Kennedy up front now, you know, you're going to get two guys who can give you 32 starts, 200 innings. There's a lot of value in that. Bud Black is an excellent manager. Bud Black is one of the guys when I sit down and kind of do my projections and I say, okay, how many runs is this team going to score? How many runs are they going to give up? After I do that, I look and say, okay, if you look at how are those runs scored and allowed going to form them, they're going to become wins. I'll use the managers to kind of say, okay, this team gets a win or two extra because they have this guy as a manager. Typically, it goes the other way more often. Yost and Washington used to have, Yost has penalty, Washington used to have penalties. But Black's a guy where I think the Padres tend to be a win or two better than their run scored runs allowed, because Black is very, very good at, particularly at running that bullpen, at getting anonymous guys like Dale Fair and Kevin Quackenbush and turning them into a productive bullpen. So Black is an asset for them in a way that Mattingly isn't an asset for the Dodgers, but that's not going to be enough to close the gap. I know I haven't mentioned the Giants yet. It's not an odd year thing. It's that, and just, what is this team now? Obviously the core is there. Posey, Crawford, Bumgarner, Kane, Brandon Belt. And a lot of those guys didn't have great years last year, but that's still their core. But I look at the outfield, okay, no Pence for, you know, at least a couple weeks to start the season. Angel Pagan is now 33 and fragile and trying to play center. Nori Aoki is their solution in left field. I just don't think, you know, third base is a hole. I mean, Casey McGee had a nice little out-of-the-blue year last year, but I don't expect him to replace that. I think he's going to be a significant downgrade offensively and particularly defensively from what they got from Panda.
So, and is there any reason to look at the Diamondbacks or the Rockies this year? Is there anything, now that Moncada is not going to be playing third base, is there anything going on with them that you are particularly looking out for, either one of those teams?
Tomas, you mean, right?
Tomas.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I've got a lot of these guys.
They haven't played yet. They haven't played yet. So until they play, like, exactly.
Not only do I think these are two of the worst teams in baseball, I think they're two of the worst organizations in baseball, which is not the place you want to be in, right? I mean, you can say this team, like last year's Red Sox, okay, that was a bad team, but in the organization you still trust. The Diamondbacks and Rockies are just lost. I mean, the Rockies have to move on from the Gonzalez-Tulo era, and I think they don't know how to do it. There is a strong farm system there, so at least you might say, okay, they've got some talent coming through. But you know, that's never been an organization that's had a coherent plan for success, you know, beyond the, you know, the next 60 games. The Diamondbacks, I don't think Dave Stewart is going to end up having a successful general manager. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm going to be absolutely wrong about this. But I think that if they're bringing a 1973 mindset to a 2015 industry. And I look at Stewart, I look at La Russa, and I think they're going about it the wrong way. I don't think the talent base works. I think this ongoing conviction that Mark Trumbo is an outfielder is... I mean, it's like me looking at a treadmill and going, I can do that. It's just not going to work. And, you know, it's forced them to use Tomas at third base, which is also not going to work. I mean, if you're going to do something ridiculous, put Trumbo back at third base, where I think he played a couple of times. Put Tomas on the outfield. At least you're taking the player you've got a greater organizational investment in and putting him in a position where he can succeed. But right now, the insistence that Trumbo is an outfielder kind of, and it goes to that same thing. There's a stubbornness to the Diamondbacks that is not. Doesn't fit their what they've had so far. So no, I think there are two bad teams and two bad organizations that are going to be that now. It's so much worse for them now because now that they're competing with a Dodgers team that not only is rich, they've got one of the best front offices in baseball. If I had to pick, you know, if I had to rank all 30 organizations based on future potential, those are going to be in the bottom, and maybe they might be the worst too because not only are they in bad shape. Their competitive environment is an absolute disaster.
Yeah, and that's brings me to my last question, which is about the Dodgers. Is this the best? Is this the franchise in the best position moving forward for the next? I mean, 10 or 15 years. I mean, they've got money and they've got really smart people in charge.
I might pick the Cubs only because it's nice if you can do it with $170 million payroll versus $270 million payroll, right? It's nice to have the money, but. The Cubs, of course, are going to be less expensive going forward because they're built around this crop of young talent, whereas the Dodgers are still paying Crawford and Ethier, and you know they've got commitments to Kershaw and Greinke, so we'll see what happens to Greinke after this year. But the point is they're spending a lot more money. So I might take the Cubs in the short term, but I think if you talk about who would you rather – the Cardinals, I think, always have to be part of this mix because they're a regional franchise that, despite playing in a small market, kind of breaks out of a lot of that small market mode in terms – they're not small revenue. They're a large revenue, small market team. But yeah, anybody else you want to put on that short list? I mean, I don't think the Astros could be there at this point. You would normally say, okay, you look at your large market franchises, but the Angels, Yankees, Mets, none of these. Yeah. Maybe the Mets. But again, you're building around young pitching, and we've now seen in consecutive years them have a young pitcher miss a season. It kind of underlines the point about building around young pitching. So, yeah, that's actually an interesting, ranking the organizations in terms of, that's something, that's the kind of thing you would do in your column, right? Yeah. That's actually perfect for a Sports on Earth game.
Oh, well, good. Well, then, fine. Find a signing editor. I'm on it. Okay, so last thing we'll do before we wrap up here, I have to actually make predictions. I know you'll be doing your run differential things in your newsletter, so these are not canon. These are you can go back on these. This is an exclusive. These can evaporate with this podcast. But let's just go ahead and make predictions for each division, starting in the American League. We'll both do it in the American League. I'd love to see the Rays make a run. I feel like the Red Sox are going to win that division.
Not only do I think the Red Sox are going to win the division, I think that the second half Red Sox are going to be a scary team when they start integrating some of those young pitching. They're going to be the best team in baseball heading into the postseason.
American League Central, my hot pick this year, I like the White Sox.
I'll probably change on this four times in the next before I actually write it, but I'm leaning towards the White Sox as well. I like the moves they made. I think they have a very strong offense, and the bullpen was a disaster for them last year. Their bullpen year over year has probably improved as much as any unit in baseball.
And in American League West, you know, I have for some reason, I evidence going against it, I still kind of feel like the Angels are going to take enough of a tumble and the A's aren't going to make enough of a move forward. I'm actually picking Seattle.
I know that I'm not taking Seattle. But right. The one thing I'm sure of is that I just think that we're getting a little too hyped on them, and I just don't think the offense is going to be good enough. I might end up defaulting to the A's just because, well, that seems to have worked the last couple of years.
Right.
I actually don't think I've picked them. I think I keep taking the Angels or the Rangers. It's tough because I would have taken the Rangers for the Darvish injury. So, for the sake of this conversation, I'll say I'll take the A's, and that's the one pick I'm going to make here today that might change over the next week.
Okay, and so let's look at who's your two wildcard teams?
Oh boy,
I'll give you mine while you're thinking. I like Cleveland and Toronto.
I'm going to go with the Orioles because they were pretty good last year. They didn't really they lost Cruz, but I think Cruz is replaceable, and I still trust Showalter. So I'm going to go with the Orioles for one spot, and I'll say the Mariners. I'll say the Mariners will win the division, but they'll fall into the one-game playoff. And I would like to see that only because Felix Hernandez is now one of, like, the 30 best players in history to never play in a postseason game. And it's not just that. He's basically almost never played in a pennant race. Unless you want to give him credit for last year, which wasn't really a pennant race, we've never seen Felix Hernandez pitch in meaningful games. I would like to see that one time.
Yeah, and particularly when it's not that hard to get in the postseason anymore.
If you go back to 1994, it's not close. Like, it's Felix Hernandez and then guys who were like 10 WAR behind him as far as guys who never played the playoff game. And even if you look at the divisional era, he's like third or fourth on that list. Now, I got to update these numbers, but he's over 40 WAR and has never played in a meaningful game. It's really, he stands out historically in a way that it's hard to really imagine.
Okay, in the National League East, I'm assuming you have Washington like I have Washington, yes?
Is there anybody out there not picking Washington? I'd like to find that person. Yeah. I know there's usually somebody who wants to be cute and, oh, I'm going to go with the Mets because this will get me some attention. I can't see any argument for any other team in that division. Not to say that the Nationals are a lock, but you really have to force it to make an argument for somebody else.
Yeah, like post-Wheeler, I think you really can't really do that.
Yeah.
In the National League, I actually do like the Cardinals this year. I think Pittsburgh's right on him, but I do think the Cardinals are going to win the division.
I do as well. I think the Pirates are, like I said, they could be as good as the third best team in that division, but the third best team in the league. I think the Cardinals are the second best team.
In the West, I feel like I just can't pick against the Dodgers.
I found reasons too the last couple of years, and I can't do it this year. The rest of the division just isn't in good enough. The Padres are probably the most interesting team in baseball just after the offseason they had, but the Dodgers, especially now that they've aligned their talent so much better. Peterson is going to be playing. Gives them a left-handed hitter, he gives them the OBP. Hopefully they'll be able to keep Ethier off the field. I would just release Ethier. He's just in the way at this point.
Yeah.
But you look at, you know, when you start with Kershaw and you start with Peterson and you start with the level of talent that they have, it's hard to screw that up, and that's where they are. By the way, one other subplot this year, Zach Greinke has an out clause in his contract.
Nice.
Interesting to watch his you say that, but I mean, you know, Zach Greinke would change next year's free agent market significantly.
Yeah, yes. And then who's your wildcard teams? I've got the Cubs and the Pirates. The Cubs playing at the Pirates.
Wow, you've got the Cubs making the playoffs.
I do. I feel like I don't like anyone else in the league. Like, I just don't really like anybody else in the National League. I don't like any of those NL East teams, and I just don't trust. To me, am I going to pick it's them or what? The Padres? Like he's in the Padres?
Right. There's a fall off. Right now, there's a top, at least for 2015, there's a top four in the National League, with the Pirates and the three division winners, and then that fifth team. Yeah, I guess the Padres, you default to the Padres. I don't know. I still haven't adjusted to picking two wild cards.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of throwing it out there. Like I know that I can pick teams to win the division, but now I'm trying. You're asking me to pick the fourth and fifth best teams in the league, and I just don't know that we're good enough at that to do that. You know,
at least I'm not asking you to pick who wins the game.
No, yeah. Well, that's when you obviously at the start of the year, SI is going to send me an email in a week now. Oh, we're going to do our preseason predictions, and I'm being asked to predict the outcome of a best of five series 6 months down the road.
Right. They're probably asking you to pick a game of one series down 6 months
yeah,
down the road.
Yeah, we're kind of guessing a little bit. No, I think that if I had to sit here now, I mean, the Nationals and the Red Sox to me are clearly the two best teams in each league, and whether they actually that have we talk about this every year. The playoffs are a crapshoot. There's just no way around it, and you know whatever happens in October happens in October. But sitting here now, the two best teams in each league are the Nationals and the Red Sox.
All right. Well, this has been as much of a blast as I thought it was going to be. Thank you, Joe. I'm ready to run through a wall, baseball-wise. Maybe run through the Wrigley Field wall, which won't actually exist when we actually get to play our first game. Thank you for doing this with me. Stick around for a little bit of trivia. We won't take too much time. But thanks for doing this, man. It was an honor, as always.
A lot of fun, man. Thanks a lot.
Okay, so make sure to follow Joe on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan, @JoeSheehan. And make sure to see his stuff in the I'm assuming my copy of the Sports Illustrated season preview issue is coming. It should be here any minute. And also, of course, go to joesheehanbaseball.blogspot.com and subscribe to his newsletter if you're not doing that already. I don't even think you like baseball very much. this is the Willie's Experience Podcast. Music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back, I'm not sure, tomorrow or Monday, maybe just Friday, with Joe Sheehan Trivia, which we're going to do in the future, which is to say right now. But anyway, I'll talk to you all then. Thanks.